Hi guys, and welcome to 40K Short, part of the Battleline Gaming Network. This is episode 3, and once again, I'm your host, Tom Dix. So today I just wanted to have a quick chat about the big FAQ. I know a lot of people have already covered this, and it's been out for a couple of weeks now, but I just wanted to get my thoughts out on it as well. Also, I'll probably touch on the newly released dates for pre-orders of the next two codexes, the Deathwatch and the Harlequins, which I'm quite excited about, if I'm honest, because I've got a good amount for both these armies up in boxes upstairs, and this is probably going to tempt me to get one, if not both of those, at the very least built and on the gaming table for a couple of practice games. But anyway, on to the big FAQ and the changes that we've seen there. First of all, the biggest one I feel is the way tactical reserves now work. This has fundamentally changed the way the 8th is working. So I'm sure you've all read it, but without going into too much detail, it basically just means now that you can't drop down on the first turn and charge. You can't drop down outside of your deployment zone and get face-to-face the enemy. It's preventing these alpha strikes and this null deployment, almost, I hate to use the word, but meta that we were seeing. Armies such as Tyranids with all their flying hive tyrants were just holding everything in reserve, so their opponent, if they didn't get the first turn, their opponent would have nothing to shoot at. If they did get first turn, it was a case they could drop down wherever, and they had a great chance of being able to get these first turn charges off, or even just the simple fact they could overwhelm them with firepower. So it was a great change to see when 8th was introduced, and I was really quite excited about it, and I welcomed it in a way that it previously worked in 6th, 7th, and the editions before that. Reserves and Deep Strike was always a risky thing. You could only do it from the second turn. You'd always have to roll for it. Yes, it got easier and easier as editions progressed, but you still had that Deep Strike mechanic whereby we had the scatter dice and the 2d6. So it was never guaranteed. It was always very risky. And being prevented from actually being able to move other than just advance or run in the shooting phase, really didn't seem like it was worth it for most of the time. But with 8th, it was great, because all these Deep Strike mechanics were built into the profile of the units. They could come down generally outside of 9 inches, which is a pretty safe distance. It means that dice roll on 2d6 to get the charge off is a little bit edgy. It's a bit over average, so there's still an element of risk to it, I guess, but overall it was a lot safer and was a lot more fun. It made the impact of the game and the assault armies, it gave them that boost that I feel they needed. However, GW, I think, and rightly so, I think it was abused, and it's just been reined in a bit now. So the way it works now is that you can still use those abilities, but from the second turn. If you wish to Deep Strike down, I keep using the word Deep Strike, but whatever the term is on that unit's profile, Manta Strike, Teleportarium, Kept in the Warp, Webway, however these units are doing it, they can't use these abilities on the first turn unless they drop down in the deployment zone, which is still a useful thing. It still means that you can effectively null deploy, though not completely, as I'll get onto in a moment. You can still keep a lot of your precious units in reserve if you're worried about your opponent getting the first turn and shooting you off the board. But more importantly, it means if you get the first turn, you're not going to suddenly overwhelm your opponent with all these threats in his face, and it take a bit of the fun out of the game for your opponent, I guess. In a tournament setting, it then just became a 50-50 who gets the highest roll. Right, okay, we might as well just end it there, because you're going to drop everything down and it's going to obliterate me in the first turn. The Alpha Strike, it's effective, but it's not fun in what is ultimately a game where we're trying to have fun with our models. I know, for one, I don't like to spend weeks, months painting up my army just to turn up, lay it out first turn, roll a dice, go, right, well, you beat me on that roll, okay, you're dropping down 7 Hive Tyrants, and all these models, they didn't even get to move. They just got to move, sit on the board, and be removed. Great. Yeah, not fun. But now I feel it's added something by only being able to do it in the second turn. We still have that reliability of being able to get those charges off early, so it still makes those assault armies valid. I don't think we'll see a complete return to the gun line. I think the response to it might be, yeah, a bit more shooty heavy now. But I think slowly and surely, I think people will come to accept this change, and I think it's for the best. So I said about the reason that you can't completely null deploy it, as you probably know from reading it, the way they've made the tactical reserves work now as well, that you can only hold back half of your power level in reserve. I'm unsure about this one. I get where they're coming from. They don't want you just holding back, like I said, with the Tyranny example, they don't want you just holding back your most powerful units, so you don't want 7 Hive Tyrants worth whatever 50 power levels or more in reserve, but you've only got 10 power levels worth of Gaunt sat on the field. I just feel it's a bit of a clunky way of doing it. Like, people are going to... I like power levels. I think it's great for pickup games, and I think it's handy to use as like a victory point mechanism. But for people to start working this out within their armies and what they can on the fly, I feel that's going to slow down the game, which is something that I think the games developers themselves have worked really hard and done extremely well with overall of speeding it up. Yes, there's a bit of bookkeeping that was done that's being more and more coming more and more into the game with the additions of stratagems, warlord traits, etc. But overall, I think it's quite a fast-paced game and it's quite easy to work things out quickly. With this mechanism, I can see exactly what they're doing. I just don't think it's been implemented in quite the right way. I'm not exactly sure the best way to do it. I'd just like to see a few other suggestions. I'm glad it is just a beta, and as they've already shown with the Smite, they are more than happy for people to send in their comments and suggestions, and they'll work it out. So this time in 6 months, when the next FAQ comes out, or perhaps they'll extend it to when Chapter Approved comes out, we might see a bit of an alteration to it, and hopefully a bit of an easier way. Get in contact with me and tell me what your thoughts are on it. How do you think it should work? So I know it's one that's probably caused a lot of disagreement, or rather I think we're all in agreement that it's not been handled the best way, and it's quite clunky. And I guess the next big bit from the FAQ that I want to talk about is the Rule of Three. First of all, I think it's probably been named wrong. The Rule of Three, I get why they kind of called it, but that is not really the Rule of Three, not the way like you see in Age of Sigmar or with the Rule of One. No, it's called the Rule of Three, but because it's only based on the average point level we play, but you play lower, there's a Rule of Two. You play higher, it's the Rule of Four. So I get it, it's poorly named, but that's what we're going with. Can't argue with that. But anyway, the point with that, again, if you haven't seen the rule, is that you can only include a certain number of each data sheet now based on the points level you're playing. So it's called the Rule of Three, based on an average game being 2,000 points. You can only include 3 of any one data sheet. And this is to stop the spam. And I think this is very much needed. Again, this is only for match play. So if you're doing your narrative or open war, whatever, and you're happily with your group of friends and you go, yeah, you know what, I'm going to whack down like 10 Riptides, I'm going to use 19 Wraith Lords because I've got some background that means that's what happens with mine or whatever. You can still do it. It's just for match play. And I think it's great. Spam is a horrible thing for the game. I think it's dull as fuck. Excuse my language. So this rule is great. I think it brings an edge. I think anyone can suddenly go, oh yeah, that's quite powerful, I'm just going to put a load of them in the army. It doesn't reward generalship at all. Spam is just boring to play, to build, to paint, to play against. And it becomes predictable. No one looks at a spam list and goes, oh yeah, no, that was really clever of them, I can see what they've done there, that's brilliant. No, they just go, oh yeah, they've just spammed it because it's powerful. Boring. So this is good. That encourages a bit more generalship, in my opinion. And makes armies much more aesthetically pleasing, which I think I talked about before. That's how I like to build my armies. I like a bit of almost symmetry, I guess, in the army. So having 3 of any one model or unit looks nice on the field. Having just having a couple to support them, it's good. I think this was kind of influenced by the Tau Codex with the limit on the commanders. Again, it's still quite easy to get 3 commanders in an army. You can quite easily get those 3 detachments in there. But we're now going to see limitations on like the number of hive tyrants we're seeing now, and the number of like chapter master, not chapter master, captains and like hell blasters throughout books. It's good. I think it's going to force people to think a little bit more. I think most people's armies probably aren't affected. Most people are probably not running more than three of any one unit anyway, unless they were trying to compete at high level tournaments. There may be some armies that it does affect, such as the two upcoming ones, the Harlequins and the Deathwatch, where they have only got a few units to begin with to play with. So it may be a struggle for them. But who knows, maybe we'll see a few adjustments to that over the years as well. But I think for the most part, this is a great addition to the game. Okay, so finally, the upcoming Deathwatch and Harlequins codexes that I just mentioned. So the White Dwarf previews have gone up. We now know the pre-order and release dates for both of these codexes are coming throughout May. Again, we'll see Deathwatch first, and I think today GW even put up a preview on their website of how the mission tactics work. So we saw these in the last book, and they're very much the same in that you pick a battlefield role, so a troops, a heavy support, fast attack, and you get benefits when you're targeting those types of units. Now, this time you just pick one for the one type of mission tactic for the game, and you can reroll ones when rolling to wound with, and that's for your whole army. It sounds a little bit. It's flexible. It is flexible. It sounds on first read of it that oh, and you're going to be stuck against this one, but no, you. They've shown there are quite a few number of ways of then changing it throughout the game using like the Watchmaster stratagems. There's a relic. So I think it's going to be an interesting one. It's going to be probably one of the most flexible armies out there. I think it's still going to be extremely elite, but it's going to be very flexible and adaptable on the playing field. The other thing they've announced is that Primaris Marines are going to be making a big, big comeback in this book, with the ability to be able to mix all the Primaris units that we've seen so far into one unit, the same way that you can do it with the regular Marines. So we're going to be seeing Aggressors, Inceptors, Intercessors all in one unit. Which could be interesting. It could be a mess. Who knows? I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to read the book again. I'm quite excited because I've got one of the Death Mask boxes upstairs, so I've got half. Oh, I've got the start of a Deathwatch army, and I've got the start of a Harlequin army. In fact, I think I've got two halves of two sets of Harlequin halves of that actually. So I actually got quite an extensive Harlequin selection up there. Anyway, so the Harlequin book will be coming out in the latter half of May. I'm very excited to see what they do with these. I'm very interested in the Eldarion stuff, the Drukhari, and the Eldari books so far, I think, have been very, very competitive and very well done. The Drukhari, especially with their ways to play. I think they were hit a little bit, unfortunately, with the way the FAQ boosted the brigade and battalion detachments. Kind of puts a bit of a damper and doesn't mean their ability to get four command points from taking three patrol detachments. That just seems a little bit meh now. It seemed, and for only having that for a matter of weeks, I think. Yeah, it seems a bit. Oh, well, I'm only getting three. I get three, four. Yeah, four command points for taking three patrols, when I could get an extra one for just taking a battalion, which actually, for the minimum requirements of that, is one less HU. I know the rule of three maybe hurts them a bit in that they've only got the one HQ for their cabals with the Archon, and the succubus for the witch cults, and the homunculus for the covens, unless you're using the special characters Lelith and Urien Rakarth. But again, I'm getting off topic, really. I was talking about Harlequins. So sorry about that. But yeah, the Harlequins are exciting, and obviously they've also previewed the massive Webway Gate, which I will definitely be picking up and painting to add to the expanding terrain collection that we've got here at Battleline Network. Anyway, that was all I wanted to cover today. Just a quick one on my thoughts there. As always, please like, comment, and subscribe to the podcast. Search me out on Twitter and Facebook. My handle is at dix_battleline. Links are in the description below. And yeah, tune in next time and have a good one. Cheers.